You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 14th of June 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking at the recent big bond market sell-off, exploring what's caused this and considering how much further there may still be to go. The financial market impact will also be under the microscope as we mull how the changes on the bond market might affect other asset classes and sectors. Plus we'll ask what all this means for the bigger picture, from the shape of investor portfolios to real-world economics. We start by exploring the background to and causes of the sell-off. What are the underlying causes, according to Paul Donovan, UBS Deputy Head of Global Economics?
Well, I think the underlying cause is a reassessment of Eurozone fundamentals. Being an economist, I think everything is due to changes in the economy. What we've had in Europe is a series of inflation numbers that have come in a little bit above expectations, particularly in the case of Germany. And what that has done, I think, is lead to a reassessment, not about an early ending of quantitative policy, but the markets are now attributing a far lower probability to a continuation of quantitative policy beyond the stated time horizon of September 2016.
It's principally good news that's led to this, explains Kieran Ganesh, cross-asset strategist at UBS Wealth Management in Zurich.
In terms of the causes, it's actually been good news that's led to this. We've seen some signs that the Eurozone is not heading to deflation. It seems to be generating some inflation, not going down the Japanese route. We've seen core inflation surprising positively. And that's led people to think about things returning to normal. And so we've seen bond yields returning to normal. So the reason for this is obviously good. What hasn't been so good is obviously the pace at which we've seen bond yields rising, which is now only comparable really with the 1994 sell-off in terms of ferocity. In terms of how much further we have to go from here, again, we can compare it to 1994. When we had the bear market in bonds then, we saw yields rising 2% from their lows. And that would suggest some way to go. But we think that it's not likely to be as severe this time because we still importantly have interest rates on hold from the European Central Bank. So we think that there's probably some more way to go, but we're currently forecasting that bund yields will rise to the 1.2%, 1.3% range over the next 6 to 12 months, and that compares to around 1% today.
Like Kieran, Kevin Allison, columnist for Reuters Breaking Views in Chicago, stresses the fact that it's a good news story, at least in part. And he also emphasises the importance of understanding where we've come from.
We've come from a standpoint of extremely pricey bonds. So yields on German bunds were at 0.05% as recently as April or May. Some European sovereign bonds, and it's Europe where the turmoil has been the greatest, some European sovereign bonds were giving negative yields. And US Treasuries, for example, are yielding about a little over 2% today. So in Europe especially, the bond market was red hot. And so part of what's going on is you're just seeing investors pull back from these insanely high bond prices, and you're seeing yields jump as a result. Another thing I think that is going on is that you're seeing steadily better economic data out of the United States. There was a little blip about a month ago on some economic data, but in general, the trend has been towards an improving U.S. economy. And even in Europe, some of the inflation readings have been coming back better than expected. That leads people to believe that maybe it's not a good idea to pay the government to lend you money, as you do when you're making negative yields on bonds. So I think you're seeing a pullback.
So have we seen the extent of this correction? In terms of how far it will go, it's maybe too difficult to say, according to Douglas Rothstein, interest rate strategist with the global CIO at UBS Wealth Management.
While interest rates bottomed on the 20th of April, what caused them to go so low first was the European economy was surprisingly weak for most of last year. In addition, inflation plunged, and that was exaggerated by the tumbling price of crude oil. And finally, very important, inflation expectations, how people think prices will behave in the future, also tumbled. So this was all of great concern to the European Central Bank, and they responded with a number of measures, including buying large quantities of bonds and other measures encouraging banks to lend. So the European Central Bank buying as well caused bond prices to go up, interest rates to go down, as investors bought bonds also ahead of them, expecting that ECB buying would push rates even lower. So this move became quite exaggerated. And I think what's fair to say is that the bottom in rates was not supported by fundamentals, and it was really extreme. So having said that, then I can address the question of why interest rates moved up. And here we can see that Eurozone economies started to form much better this year. Inflation seems to have bottomed as well and may even be rising. This leads us to believe that the European Central Bank, very forceful actions, really are working and helping the European economy. So in that scenario, such low rates were really simply uninteresting for investors, and it's impossible to say really what exactly triggered the selling, but once it started, the above conditions really made it that things were really in place for a rather big move.
Next, we're considering what the financial market impact of the bond sell-off might be, both on other asset classes and across sectors. Here's Paul Donovan again.
Well, the main concern that comes out of an episode like this is what is going to happen to market liquidity in the medium term via the financial system. One of the things that regulation of the banks has changed in the last few years is that when we get periods of market volatility, banks are required to hold more capital as an insurance against that volatility. Now, that sounds very sensible, but of course, what happens when you get an episode like this is that banks have to scramble around to try and find capital. They may reduce the liquidity that they provide to other financial markets. They may indeed choose to scale back on bank lending and to divert capital from bank lending to cover the capital requirements caused by this volatility. So the reaction of the banking system, I think, is going to be one of the main issues. Now, the moves we've had so far are not terribly serious, but I do think it was perhaps a little unwise of ECB President Draghi to be quite so cavalier in his approach to financial volatility and say it's just something we've got to get used to.
Is there a trickle-down effect? Kevin Allison certainly thinks so.
Bond yields, especially government bond yields, high-class government bond yields, European sovereign debt, U.S. treasuries, they are kind of the lodestars for the entire pricing of risk in the financial system. When you buy a stock or if you buy a piece of art, theoretically, what you're doing as an investor is saying, I'll get a return on this stock that is X percent above the very safe return that I would get on government bonds. And you can look at that extra return and say, what do I think my chances of actually getting that return are, and is it worth the risk? But when the bedrock of the system, bond yields, start to turn extremely volatile when they've been safe for a long time, it throws the whole system off, and you no longer have a reliable foundation on which to build your model of how you think risk should be priced in the financial system. And so that is going to have a knock-on effect on other asset classes. You saw European stocks start to sell off when bonds started to get really volatile in May. And I think you might see effects in other asset classes. But I think it's important to remember, if to the extent that the bond sell-off is a response to good economic news, this can't be a bad thing.
Across other asset classes, what's the impact likely to be? Take equities, for example. Could there be a negative effect? Justin Knight is head of the European Rate Strategy Desk at UBS.
We are bullish as a house on equities. We see that earnings are being upgraded consistently now for the first time in 8 years. And of course, if we say that bond yields, European government bond yields, should I say, are rising because of an improving fundamental outlook, then that should also lift stocks as well. So while the stock market, I think, was a little bit rattled by the speed and the intensity of the sell-off in the bond market, we expect stocks really to recover from that and to go on rising over the rest of this year.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look to the impact of these bond market trends on investor portfolios and consider some potential real-world economic consequences too. The reshaping of investor portfolios and the recalibration of investor sentiment in the event of a big bond sell-off is interesting. What does Kiran Ganesh think that what we've seen means for investor portfolios?
Well, clearly the assets which are most directly impacted negatively are government bonds. They obviously have a very low level of yield, so any moves you see and any in the prices translate directly through into people's portfolios. There's not a lot of yield left to try and insulate people. In terms of the impact on other asset classes that people might hold in their portfolios, things like equities and other types of bonds like credit, here we've seen equities in the Eurozone have been very negatively affected so far. There's been concerns about the bond sell-off, in addition to concerns about Greece, have led German equities, for example, to be around 10% from their peaks. And credit has been negatively affected, although not so badly. We've been recommending credit as an alternative to government bonds to our clients, because even if we start to see yields rise, at least you have a higher level of yield, so it means that you don't lose quite so much through the course of a year. So, you know, net-net, the portfolio impact has obviously been negative as a result of this sell-off, but we don't think this is any time to panic at the moment. The underlying economic data remains good enough to suggest that we'd expect to see equities resuming their rise at some point in the next month and credit continuing to deliver positive returns.
And changes in portfolio makeup are also of interest to Douglas Rothstein.
Well, we have been underweight high-grade bonds. Those are the bonds that are most interest rate sensitive in client portfolios for some time. And so we've had less exposure to this move in rates, both with rates going down and rates going up. It's worked out quite well because we've allocated those funds to high-yield bonds in U.S. and in Europe, and also to equities. And both of those have been outperforming high-grade bonds. So we're not at the moment looking to change the allocation to bonds in our portfolios. We maintain this risk overweight because, as I said, we feel that this move in interest rates is a sign that actually the European economy is doing better and the markets are functioning as they should function. And this leads us to maintain this risk-on stance that we have.
Especially in terms of the recalibration of risk that Kevin Allison mentioned earlier, does that inevitably mean change to individual portfolios?
One of the big U.S. bond funds, PIMCO, has been, you know, ditching its U.S. Treasury holdings, for example. They've been moving around where they're putting their money. I think you'll see other investors do that. But again, if it's the absolute safest bonds that are being called into question, there does raise this issue of, well, where is safe? Is there a safe risk-free asset, or is it simply that nothing is really as risk-free as it seems? Are we, instead of entering an era of risk-free returns, one strategist who we've spoken to on our team once has quipped that we're entering an era of return-free risk. And if that's the case, I think it becomes very difficult for investors to make reliable, sort of level-headed in decisions about where to put their money. And that's a problem.
Finally, on this week's exploration of the big bond market sell-off, we are asking, what does it mean for the real world, for companies and consumers? Maybe not a great deal right now, but further down the line, the story could be different, according to Paul Donovan.
Well, of course, for most people, this is not something which is going to impact their daily lives immediately, in as much as a small sell-off in the bond market from, frankly, what were absurdly low yield levels, isn't going to affect the vast majority of companies and consumers in the economy. It has a mild impact in terms of government funding costs, but again, I don't think many people, certainly very few economists, thought that the very, very low yields we were seeing at the start of this year were sustainable. The problem comes in if there is a more significant reaction from the financial sector. If the banking sector does start to change behavior as a result of this volatility and potentially more volatility in bonds, then that is something which feeds through into the real world. If people find it perhaps a little bit more difficult to get credit, for example, if people find that banks are a little bit more reluctant to lend, that is going to be something which has a real economic impact.
And what's Douglas Rothstein's view?
Well, interest rates have been extraordinarily low, and in Europe, a move from 0 to 1% in 10-year bonds, I don't think this is going to do any damage to the economy. The European Central Bank as well confirmed their view that most business financing in Europe is taking place through banks at short-term rates rather than long-term rates, so it probably won't even be felt to a great extent by businesses. And the move in other European countries has been less extreme because as Europe peels and European economies are doing better, bond yields in countries like Italy and Spain are doing better than bond yields in Germany. So for all of Europe, actually, it's quite a good scenario.
Meanwhile, Bob Swarup, the financial commentator and investor and author of Money Mania, looks to the Fed and to emerging markets in terms of the most significant potential impact.
I think there's some real worries out there from a knock-on effect. I mean, let's talk about, for example, the idea that the Fed is going to tighten at some point. You know, bear in mind the Fed may be the American central bank for the US. However, it's actually also the world's central bank, given the enormous influence they have over everything. And so actually, when they start to raise rates, if they were to, they have a real problem, because there's $2.6 trillion of emerging market debt out there, of which about three quarters is in dollars. So a lot of these emerging markets are going to find some major spillover effects where their currencies are falling, but actually their affordability on these loans is rapidly going out of whack. So I think that's a serious issue which could cause a real problem for a lot of these emerging markets.
And the last word to Chicago and Kevin Allison, who suggests that the corporate bond market is something to keep an eye on in particular.
The corporate bond market has not yet seen quite the level of volatility that the sovereign bond market has in recent months. However, if the volatility starts to spill over, you could see corporations start to be less interested in issuing debt, just because the yields on corporate bonds, similar to sovereign bonds, have been unusually low. That means that companies have been able to raise money very cheaply through debt financing. And if that stops, you could start to see knock-on effects in the real economy as companies take different decisions about how to raise capital. I think for your average consumer, higher interest rates, which is what a lot of people in the bond market might be worried about when they start to think about selling off their bonds, higher interest rates for a lot of consumers would be a good thing, because it means that savers would finally be getting some sort of return on bank deposits and other types of fixed income securities that they have not been able to get for a very long time. It's been causing all kinds of problems in things like pension funds. And for people on limited or fixed incomes who are retired, for example, the years since the financial crisis have been very difficult because ultra-low interest rates hits their income. So I think for some of those people, it could be good. For the financial markets, it creates a lot more problems.
And that's Kevin Allison, bringing us to the end of this 36th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week, here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.